Good day, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to Avida Full Year Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you need to press star one one on your telephone. You'll then hear an automated message advising your hand is raised. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. I'll now like to turn the call over to Mr. Jeremy Nicoll, CEO of the company. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for taking the time this morning to join us to have a chat through the FY24 annual results. So I'll talk a little bit through the strategy, and then I'll hand over to Mark to talk through some of the financial stuff, and then we'll be opening it up for a Q&A session at the end. So for the year, we recorded 139 million dollar net profit after tax, which was up 69% on the prior period. The big contribution there was a 165 million dollar increase in the fair value of our investment properties. Underlying profit was down a touch from 88 million to 85 million, but operating EBITDA was up from 84 million to 95 million dollars. Over the year, we increased our total assets by 12%, up to 4.2 billion. And pleasingly, on the embedded value calculation, we increased that by 11%, up to 1.3 billion dollars. We captured a bunch of the embedded value through the operating cash flow, which was at 144 million dollars compared to last year at 148 million. And our gearing ended the year at 33.9%. As a company, we have a target range of 35%-25% gearing, so we're reaching towards the upper end of our internal target. In terms of the net tangible assets per share, we increased it from $1.90 up to $2.05, and earnings per share came in at $0.117 per share. So, in terms of the key results from FY24, the property market has been challenging, but it was very, very pleasing to see a record sales performance being delivered. In terms of sale gains, we got 74 million from resales and 28 million from new sales. So a record performance on that front, despite the economic environment. There was some deferrals of settlements towards the end of the year, so some of that cash flow will come through in FY25. We spent quite a lot of time focused on our capital structure and preserving headroom within our debt facilities. We also successfully repositioned our debt facility to a split it out between core and development, which is now matching how we want to see the business being run into the future. On a revenue basis, we increased our service packages by about 25%, and the weekly fees for new residents on average across the group was up 12%. Throughout FY24, we had a focus on reviewing our safe staffing ratios within our care centers and running a couple of pilots on how those ratios would work in practice. We've commenced the rollout of what we're calling workforce planning across all of our care communities. Workforce planning for us is about having the right number of people and the right mix of staff within our rosters, so that our teams can deliver what we call the attitude of living well in our care centers and also making sure workloads are sustainable. We've been focusing on getting the right-sized teams, as they will generally be higher performing, happier, and more focused and productive. Through that process, we will be achieving some savings from an operating cost perspective, and we expect to have the rollout completed across all of our care communities by the end of the first half. We've also been focused on maturing some critical operational areas with our business, particularly in the technology space, and it's very pleasing to see the steps forward that we've taken there. I'll talk a little bit about culture and capability a bit later on. And we've also looked at very hard at our development program, and that's been repositioned. And what you will have seen is a a reduction in the spend in the second half on development CapEx, which was down to 90 million from 127 million in the first half. We also sold Strathallan, a village in Timaru, for 30 million dollars. We had it revalued for reporting purposes at the end of March 2024, and that valuation was 30.1 million dollars. So, achieving a 1% discount to the current market value. Now, that sale has settled at the end of April. As we move into FY 2025, we have commenced a value recognition program. So this program is underway to assess and execute a range of options to accelerate the recognition of the company's intrinsic value for shareholders, and we have appointed two financial advisors to assist us with the various options. These options include engaging with other market participants on various capital partnerships, restructuring options and strategic alternatives, together with some internal exploration of areas where we can make improvements, and we'll talk about those as we move through the pack. We've been underway with this program for some time, and we are taking a balanced approach to make sure that the interests of our shareholders, residents, and team members are at the forefront of this process. As and when we have further market updates, we will provide those through the announcement platform. So in terms of those strategic priorities for FY 2025, we've talked about the value recognition program. We've identified around 200 million dollars of core debt reduction initiatives that we will be going after. You know, some of these have already happened. So for example, we've captured the cash from the sale of Strathallan that I've talked about. Some of them relate to capturing the cash flow from prior year deferred settlements, reducing our resale stock levels, resolving the outstanding business interruption claim from the weather event of January last year. We've got some surplus land from that's not required for the villages that we are building. So good example there is at Warkworth, where we purchased a super lot. There is also some ability for us to gain resource consent on unconsented development land, and it effectively moves that debt from core across to development. So whilst that's not a cash flow, it will reduce core debt. And as you will have seen, later in the announcement, we have suspended the dividend at this point while we go through the value recognition program. In terms of cost savings, we're aiming to save an initial 10 million dollars of annualized savings in the current financial year. I've already talked a bit about the workforce planning process. There's other benefits through support office, our procurement program, and also our bureau usage within the care centers that will also help us deliver that 10 million dollars of operational cost savings. In terms of revenue capture, some of the key things we are looking at there is adding a mechanism to our weekly fees. Obviously, this is for new residents coming into the village. That would include an uplift mechanism for that. Obviously, with high levels of inflation over the recent years, high levels of rate increases and insurance increases, fixed weekly fees for life within the village side of the business doesn't work particularly well. So we will be looking at that, as well as obviously resale pricing. We've got care suite conversion programs underway, and then a continual focus, as we did in the prior year, on occupancy premium fees, and service packages. In terms of our development business, it's just about getting the balance right with the cash flows in this current point of the cycle. So just getting that balance right between what we're spending and what we're getting in. We have reduced the build rate for the current year to between 140 and 150 new units, with most of those well underway. We're also looking at our overall project cash returns as we move forward. In terms of what we did deliver in FY24 compared to the strategic priorities that we set out this time a year ago, we did deliver mostly villas, in fact, all villas in the second half of the financial year. We have completed Aria Bay, which is a milestone for us internally. We've also got the Queenstown Care and Apartment site ready to for completion towards the end of the first half of this financial year, and then the Bethlehem Shores Care and Apartments building the following financial year. We have kept the gearing within the target band. However, as I said at the outset, we are approaching the higher end of our internal band. So we have also looked hard at our development process and aligned our debt facilities to match that. Within the core parts of our business, we have refreshed our rewards proposition, our values, and also increased that focus within the IT area. Now, I've talked a bit about care profitability, core profitability. Care occupancy is a key part of that, and that was at 94% at the end of the financial year. And I've talked about the other items on that. So at this point, I'll hand over to Mark to have a talk through some of the financial slides.
Good morning, everybody. Revenue grew 11% for the year with improved operating performance, with operating EBITDA increasing to 95 million. Strong sales in the second half of the year pushed resale gains up to 74 million. New sales gains were at 28 million, and the interest expense increased to 28 million, which reduced underlying profit to 85 million. The operating revenue graph reflects strong growth in our retirement village business, with care revenue improving in late 2023 with improved occupancy and sector funding increases. Further fee capture mechanisms will capture further fee increases, and with the continued the momentum. Operating costs increased to 241 million, with employee costs up on increased care suite operations and support office investment. Rates, insurance, and food, as Jeremy mentioned, remain high, and further investment has been made in our advertising and brand. The operating EBITDA graph includes increased resale gains. Pleasingly, the per bed EBITDA is back to an annualized rate of 15,500 for our standalone care villages. Further increases in fees will flow through in FY25. Pleasingly, strong second half in sales for total resales of 414 units, total income of 249 million. The margin was 31%. New sale units of 218 for a total value of 178 million on average price of 816,000 per unit. Continued strong demand for our retirement village product, with applications up nearly 20% for the year. The next slide shows maturing resale value within the resale margins continue to grow on our maturing villages. The ex-arena villages margin for the year was 45% on average. Overall sales pricing increased 4.7% for the year based on CBRE valuation at 31 March 23. The embedded value increased a further 11% after the releasing the 74 million of gains and 36 million of cash DMF. The total embedded value now sits at 1.26 billion, and that represents $1.72 per share. There's still volatility in the cash flows in this challenging housing market. Funding has not kept up with cost inflation. and the high interest rate environment continues to challenge cash flows. Over the slide, there's further cash flow breakdown, which shows the improved sales receipts, which are offset by those higher interest costs. And there is targeting of near-term fee increases and also the cost management efficiencies Jeremy outlined. FY24 saw 201 units delivered, and we are prioritising the villa developments with phased capital-intensive projects at our premium sites of Queenstown Country Club and Bethlehem Shores. We have got a program of care suite conversions that are underway, should flow into the FY25. Development capital expenditure, H2 saw major reduction in that capital expenditure cash flows, and we are targeting the new sales to exceed FY25 development CapEx. Increased new unit sales for reduced stock levels, 213, with 32% of those now sold. Onto the balance sheet. The balance sheet saw investment property increase 395 million on the developments and fair value gains of 165 million. Total assets now sit at 4.2 billion, with that flowing through to NTA of $2.05 per share. Finally, on the debt funding, second half increase was 27 million for a total debt of 780 million, with their gearing now sitting at 33.9%. The bank facility restructure is now complete with the split of core and development facilities, and the year-end headroom was further increased by that sale of Strathallan. I'll now pass back to Jeremy to continue.
So as I talked about at the start, we have had a focus on our three-year people strategy to become an employer of choice in the sector. Aveda's always had a very strong culture, and as we've grown, we've seen the need to revitalise and embed that culture for the long term. So we have been working through a program of looking at our purpose and values, and what we've seen through this process is that we've had retention increase up to 79%. Our engagement that we measure through the PECON system is up to 7.7, and we've also seen turnover down to 26%. The nurse turnover is still high at 38%, but it is down. What we do see through our work is that turnover generally happens with people in the first year of their employment. If we can get them through the first year, we have a very good tenure from there. What we are seeing is that aged care in particular can be used as a transient employment opportunity for people coming into the country and then potentially moving either to Australia or into the public system. In terms of our net promoter scores, again, we achieved excellent results from our annual survey of residents, with independent residents sitting at plus 4.2 and care residents at plus 4.6. So great results overall, and it really does reflect the wonderful work that the team does on the ground every day. In terms of our structure, you will have seen today that we announced that Ian from Kiwi Property is going to come across and join us next month as our new General Manager Development. And we're also looking to appoint a General Manager Operations, which is combining our current COO role and our vacant GM Services role. In terms of sustainability, we were heavily involved in the process for the development of the climate change scenarios for the health and construction sectors. So we put a huge amount of work into this space this year. What we've seen with our emissions is scope one are down 3% from using less gas, which obviously comes with a CapEx investment. Our scope two emissions were down 31%, but that was really due to a change in the emissions factor. We've secured funding for a first sector-wide food waste reduction project in New Zealand, and the development team have been progressing with measuring and reducing the construction waste, looking at what the emissions are per type of unit that we're building. We've also seen them introduce sustainability measures at the outset of a recent remediation project, which not only diverted a lot of waste from the landfill, but also saved money on the overall construction cost. In terms of the outlook, obviously we are in a volatile economic environment. Hopefully that will be reducing once interest rates fall, and then, inflation falls, and then interest rates may moderate after that. But there's a possibility that this economic cycle might be longer than we think. Workforce shortages are largely limited to experienced nurses in some regional areas. So obviously with the unemployment rate increasing, there is more workforce availability. The property market is still relatively illiquid. And as we've talked about over the years with you, we're not too concerned about where residential property prices go up or down. What we need is a nice liquid property market. And obviously, over the last 12 months, it's been a relatively challenging market for our potential residents to be able to sell their own home. The government's come out recently with another aged care announcement with a select committee inquiry. That goes alongside Health New Zealand's current review of service standards and funding models. We will be due to hear about the review of the funding rate for the period from 1 July over the next few weeks. As I talked about at the start, the board has decided to pause the dividend payments and policy pending the outcome of the value recognition program. We are actively considering amending the dividend policy to use a different metric than underlying profit, and we will come back to you with our interim results to give you an update on where we're at with dividend policy and go from there. I'll just give you a quick overview of some of the developments and then we'll go to Q&A time. As you can see on page 30, we've got a lot going on in the greenfield space now, and we'll talk about some of the big projects as we go through. Aria Bay was a site that we bought in 2015. We've now completely redeveloped that site, so it's a fantastic milestone for our team to complete the deliveries on that site. At Bethlehem Shores in Tauranga, we delivered the final 20 villas in what we called Stage 5, great name. That's been a wonderful product for us, great demand in that area, and we've been able to lift villas in that final stage by around 200k per unit. We have started, and the big picture there is the Cairn Apartments building. What you can see there is cross-laminated timber being erected, and the building, the wing on the left-hand side of the photo, is now got a roof on and work's going on the internals of that building. So those wings are effectively the apartment wings, and in the forefront of the photo is where the care centre will be. At Lansdowne Park, we completed a further 18 villas. At Queenstown, we are getting very excited about the upcoming delivery of the care and apartment building, which is in the forefront of the big picture. We will have 62 care suites and 29 high-value apartments. We do run a care centre which is attached to the public hospital, which we took over as a bit of a favour to the Southern DHB a few years ago. Those people will transfer into the new care centre, and the DHB, whatever they're called now, will be looking to redevelop the public hospital once we've moved the residents out. At Te Puna Waiora, at the end of March, we opened our new clubhouse, which is in the larger picture. Construction there continues to go well. It's a beautiful product. At Waimea Plains, we are now moving on to the care suite centre. Most of the villas are now done, and we'll be looking to start the care suite centre in the next 12 months. And in Te Awamutu, you can see some pictures there of the villas that we've developed. Demand there has been amazing, lots of interest, great sales, so very, very happy with that program. As we talked about earlier, we are targeting around 145 new units this year. We will be looking to supplement that with some care suite conversions, which obviously are subject to said availability. And we've also been active in the greenfield space. Our Lincoln site is now rezoned and consented. So the consent came through 2 weeks ago. At Waikanae Beach, the master planning is getting closer and the trades there are getting more competitive than they have been. At Warkworth, which is the picture on the right, we have now lodged the rezoning and plan change application. And there's obviously that was the super lot, and we do have around 40 hectares of surplus land that we can sell and use to repay debt. In terms of our master plan ideal scenario, it's around that 200 villas and 40 care suites. At this point, I will pause. There is a lot of information that we've provided in the appendices of the presentation for you to read at your leisure. And at this point, we'll just open it up for Q&A.
Thank you. As a reminder, to ask a question, you need to press star 11 on the telephone. Please stand by while we compile the Q&A roster. Our first question comes from the line of Ari Decker from Jarden. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning. Just firstly on the value initiatives, I recognise there's nothing binding and you'll be somewhat limited in what you can give colour on, but can you just sort of describe what you're alluding to with regards to the comment engagement on various capital partnerships with other market participants, and then also, you know, maybe what restructuring options might look like as well?
Yep. Okay. So the board's appointed a couple of advisors to assist with the assessment of the available external options for the company. The options that we've talked about are capital partnership. That could be on a group of villages where Avida sells a majority position but retains management rights. There was a deal announced overnight in Australia. I think it was Invesco and Stockland on something similar. There are opportunities to restructure the business, which could include increasing the portfolio by way of merger, splitting out an opco-propco structure, or there could be a full sale of the company. I mean, all options are on the table with this strategic, I'm sorry, with this value recognition program.
Okay, no, thanks for that. Then just moving to the $200 million of initiatives on core debt, and you gave some really good colour on what that all incorporates. Just in terms of timeframes, what sort of timeframe should we be sort of thinking about for the $200 million of initiatives?
Yeah. So there's a group of them that will be completed within the 12 months, which will be the majority of it. Some of them may take a little bit longer than that. We've got some pretty firm internal targets on those dates, but we're hoping that we can get through the vast majority of those initiatives this year. I went through the list of the seven key items that go into that core debt reduction plan. And so those seven items, when you add them all up, it gets to $200 million.
The plan for us is be able to reduce that core debt. Obviously, with core debt, there are things that will increase core debt over the period, you know, but we've already captured the proceeds from the sale of Strathallan. We've announced today that we're suspending the dividend, so that again will save further money. In terms of core debt in particular, that obviously relates only to resale settlements that were deferred from the prior year. Of that, we've already captured just over 10 million dollars. We've got the business interruption claim that we're in discussions with our insurers about. Obviously, that was a key drag on our cash flow in FY 2024. Obviously, we were recognizing the income and our provision for the business interruption claim, but the cash flow was somewhat limited. We are looking at reducing our resale stock levels. We've talked about the surplus land recycling. That will take a little bit of time as we are going through the plan change process at Warkworth. We're hoping that we will have an outcome of that plan change by the close of the calendar year. And then the resource consenting of unconsented development land will be an ongoing process. Obviously, I talked about the fact we've got Lincoln recently, so that will be the first cab off the rank there.
Now, that's really helpful, Jeremy. Thank you. And then just the last one from me. The OpEx savings of 10 dollars, I mean, would it be right to characterize that as being dominated by savings at the village level over head office and also being, you know, dominated by, I guess, expensed rather than anything sort of capitalized? And then just sort of follow on to that also with regards to the indexing of weekly fees. Is that sort of what you have in mind, indexing it, and when would you be looking to implement that?
Yep. So the indexing one is correct. So we will be looking at an appropriate uplift mechanism, whether that's to super rates or CPI or whatever. And we're looking to have that in place by the end of September for, obviously, for new residents. We can't go backwards with existing residents. And in terms of your question around OpEx savings, a lot of it is within our workforce. There's about 5% of that 10 million that would be related to capitalizable costs.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. One moment for the next questions. Our next question comes from the line of Nick Marr from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Just on the Care Suite conversion, how are you guys planning to treat that from a sale margin perspective?
Okay, so Care Suite conversions and the sale margin perspective. So we will take the price that we sell it for, and we will deduct the amount of money that we spend on the upgrade of that unit.
So there's no incoming value or holding value of the unit?
No, 'cause that's reflected in the care weekly fee amount, effectively.
Okay, no, that's fine. And then, at Waimea, you sort of talked about a redesign of the care building.
Yep.
What are the changes that you're making there?
So at Waimea, we've originally planned a multi-story care center with, I think it was about 60 Care Suites in it. We costed it. We had a feasibility and a budget, and when we costed it up, the cost to construct it were too far in excess of what we were willing to spend. So we are in the midst of a program to review the size of that building, so we'll reduce the number of Care Suites, and it will be a single-level building rather than a two-story building.
That's great. That's all for me. Thank you.
Cheers, Nick.
Thank you for the questions. One moment for the next questions. Our next question comes from the line of Aaron Ibbotson from Forsyth Barr. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Good to hear some interesting initiatives. I've got two main questions. So firstly, I was just wondering, so your developments or certainly your deliveries sort of slightly trended down, and you're now guiding to lower deliveries next year versus or this year versus last year reported. But if I look in your balance sheet, you know, investment property under construction and development land is going up quite meaningfully.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering if you could, A, help us understand a little bit exactly what's in the investment property under construction, you know, what proportion is capitalized versus just costs as they happen, and also how you see that develop over the next 12 months.
Yeah, so we do have some costs in there in relation to the deliveries for this year and for next year. So we've got probably the largest bits at the moment would be the Queenstown Care and Apartments building, followed by the Bethlehem Shores Care and Apartments building. So those are sort of two-year build programs, and they'll be recycled out. We do go through a process of making sure that we're comfortable with the carrying values of our work in progress on an annual basis with our team here, our auditors and our board. Obviously, it's a hot topic of discussion at the moment, and we're... And there's also some civils there on greenfield projects which go across multi-years. But, yeah, we're comfortable with the level of the holding.
But if I'm more specific, so if I look outside of capitalised interest, you know, to what degree do you have capitalised off-site costs in your,
in terms of the development, if we employ someone as a development manager, or if we've got employees doing the construction itself, we capitalized their direct employment cost only. We don't capitalize their travel or ancillaries or anything like that. So it's really just their wages and obviously the capitalized interest.
But there's no allocation from a head office or something like that, broader allocation?
No. We never have.
Thank you. And secondly, just, you know, you've given some really good granularity on this reduction of core debt initiatives. And if I heard you right, you also mentioned that you expected the new sales cash flow to be above CapEx, or at least above development CapEx this year. I appreciate there might be some overlap there, but I wondered if there's any chance you can, you know, give us an indication what you expect overall net debt to do, because as you pointed out, there's a bit of drag on core debt from the ongoing operations, etc. So is it fair to say that you assume reported net debt without splitting it into buckets to be down for the next 12 months?
Yes. Otherwise, I won't be here on the next results call. That will be the next special.
And then final and related question from me, and maybe this is obvious to everyone else, but on slide 8, you talk about whole project cash flow being positive versus a new sales covering CapEx excluding capitalized interest. So what exactly do you mean by whole project cash flow?
Okay, so a good example is the Lincoln site. I think where we've talked probably a couple of years ago with a group of people that are on this call around what amount of cash do we expect to leave into a whole project, a whole greenfield project from scratch. And we're probably talking to you around that sort of 10-ish million dollar mark. So with Lincoln, our feasibility is cash flow positive across the entirety of the project.
So where is this land sales you're talking about, or you know, what cash is coming in that's not new sales?
No, no, what I'm saying is for a new project, and we've been doing the feasibility on Lincoln, which is a site in Canterbury. Previously, we would have probably said to you that we would tip in maybe $10-ish million on a project like that. The feasibility for that project is showing a positive total net project cash flow.
Okay, sorry, I don't mean to be complicated here, but just on your slide 8, on your strategic priorities, you said that the gross value from new sales is greater than development capex, excluding capitalized interest,
mm-hmm.
but positive whole project cash returns. So,
yep. So I've just talked about what whole project cash returns is. Maybe we'll just pick it up offline if you're not getting what I'm saying.
Okay, sure. Let's do that.
Thank you for the questions. Next question comes from the line of Stephen Richwell from Craigs IP. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Just wondering if we could get a little bit more colour on the kind of quantum of savings you'd be targeting, you know, from new rostering in that second half. And Jeremy?
So in the second half, we're looking to capture the savings in totality by the end of September. So there may be around of that 10 million, 3 to 4 million captured in the second half of the year.
Got it, thank you. And then I guess when we add the repricing on weekly fee initiative, which you talked to, are you expecting kind of the operating margins, you know, of the business to kind of increase in FY25, or are these savings you're alluding to going to be, you know, eaten up by cost pressures elsewhere? So, you know, so obviously we're seeing rising rates in insurance and that kind of thing.
Yeah, look, it's a very good question, Stephen. So what we've got to do is what we can do to pull back on our operational costs where we can. There are some things like council rates that are difficult to argue with. Insurance, again, in this market, it can be challenging. So there is going to be some cost increases through those lines. We've also seen nurse wage rates increase, you know, despite Te Whatu Ora sort of funding us this time a year ago to get us to pay parity for public system nurses. That didn't last long with Te Whatu Ora having a couple of rate increases since then. So there is continual cost pressure on upwards trend on those key three items.
Okay, thanks, Jeremy. And then just at a high level, I mean, can you give a rough steer as to what OPEX growth will be in FY25? I mean, should we expect it to be a bit lower than it was in FY24, so that 14%?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So it will be a bit of a mixed year as well. We've obviously got the Strathallan sale that will come out as well, and there's a little bit of a breakdown of some of those core key items within the Strathallan underlying profit within the pack.
And we'll also have Queenstown coming online later in the year as well.
Okay, thanks. Apologies for the background noise there. We've got multiple calls on in the office at the moment. And just one last one from me. So to helpful colour on trading year to date for the new sales with the 22 sold, I guess, sorry, you know, how does that kind of compare to this time last year? And then, you know, do you sense any change in, like, can you give us a sense of change in pricing, both for the front book and perhaps the resale book? I mean, we're seeing kind of prices trend, you know, perhaps where they were this time last year, please.
Yep. So last year we had a very slow start to the year, in terms, particularly on the new sale front. So we're nicely ahead of where we were last year. We, you know, over the year ahead, we'll be happy if we increase unit pricing by sort of 3%-4% on our existing book, as that will be a good outcome in this environment. Obviously, we were 4.7% up on valuations last year. I don't think we'll hit 4.7% this year, but hopefully in that sort of 3%-4% range.
Thanks, Jeremy. Just to clarify, I mean, is that 3%-4% kind of after any change in incentives? Because we have noticed, more incentives coming at, cash backs and that kind of thing coming into the market. Is that something Arvida's doing, or is that 3%-4% like for like?
3%-4% like for like, based off the independent valuations.
Perfect. Thanks very much. That's all from me.
Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. As a reminder, to ask question, please press star one one. Our next question comes from the line of Shane Solly from Harbour Assets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, guys, and thanks for the presentation. Very useful. Quick one for me. Just the value recognition program you're running, what's the sort of timing? When does the board think that process or review will be complete or at an end?
It's a great question, Shane. Obviously, one of our next milestones is we have an annual meeting in August. It will be a topic of discussion at that meeting. Depending on which way we progress, it will impact on timeframes as well. So unable to sort of answer the when will it come to an end question at this point in time.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the time.
No worries, Shane.
Thank you. There are no more questions on the line. I'd like to hand the call back to management for closing.
Thanks, everyone, for coming along and joining the call today. If you do have any questions, please feel free to get hold of myself, Mark, or Mark over the coming days. Have a great day, everyone. Appreciate it. It's pretty busy out there today. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect your lines.